HarperCollins presents The Silence Factory by Bridget Collins. Read by Bridget Collins and Ned Porteous.
Part 1. Near Tilverton, June 1820s.
Last night I could hear them again. They make so little noise that I do not understand how it can carry through the corridors of this house. But carry it does. It is hard enough to sleep, gravid and swollen as I am, and once I hear it, I cannot turn my thoughts away from it. So when that silken whisper began to tug at me, I dragged myself to my feet to answer the summons. I drew on a wrapper because the half-hearted English summer night did not warm me past the top of my skin, and padded on naked feet down the stairs and through the dim passages until I came into the orangery. The moon was full, dazzling among the foliage of the olive and lemon trees, glinting through the stinking juniper. If it had not been for the walls and windows, I might have thought myself transported, and I caught myself thinking, home. But that Mediterranean island was not home. It was never home, no matter how much I longed to belong there, no matter how I yearned to lose myself forever in the midday shade of the evergreen forests. I should have remembered that I am an Englishwoman, a Christian, alien and pale-skinned, and above all, James's wife. If I had held tight to those undeniable facts, if I had kept faith, then... Oh, but it is done. It is over. It is no good now. I stood shivering and barefoot on the threshold, staring at the shimmer of reflections at the far end of the room, where the glass cases stand half concealed by the greenery. The moonlight and shadows were so deceptive that I could make out nothing but my own wan face peering back at me through leaves, my thin shoulders and bony neck, above the shocking mass of my breasts and belly. It was not until I stepped forward into a band of darkness, erasing myself, that I could make out the contents of the nearest vivarium, the branches dry on the dead stones, the scatter of fallen pine needles, the scabrous bundles that hung like limbed fruit from the webs that spanned from one side to the other. I could smell putrefaction. The sound that had woken me grew louder. Or did it? Perhaps it was an illusion. Perhaps it is always, ever an illusion. And seemed to swirl about the room, coming from new directions, or from every direction at once. It is neither a song nor a susurrus, not a call nor a creak nor a command. And yet it is all of those. It cut my breath and made my innards roil. I found my legs carrying me towards the tank until I was barely a hand's width from the glass. Within the tank, something moved. At first, it was hardly perceptible, a little trembling in the cobweb, a glint of moonlight too brief to fix my gaze upon. Then, with its peculiar darting rush, the spider was poised in front of me. Its abdomen glistened like a polished mineral. Its precise legs were dotted with vivid red at the joints. I was glad of the pain between us. But as I kept my gaze steadily upon it, I grew conscious of more movement from every side, until at last I glanced up and across and saw that in each tank a spider was emerging from its corner or crevice, advancing into the dense heart of its web. It must have been my footsteps across the floor, or some other variation in vibration, temperature or humidity. Indeed, let us be rational, James would cry. But to my sleepless mind it had the deliberate improbability of a nightmare. I could feel the hostility, the reproach in every eye, and there were so many of them. So many eyes, and each one turned on me. I said, although not aloud, "Forgive me." I said, "I did not mean to bring you here." I said, "Are you hungry? I shall bring you more food. I shall bring it to you alive." And I meant it, even though it made my gorge rise to remember the long sea voyage and the looks that the sailors turned on me when I begged them for live rats at any price. I had not known I could be so fierce, so devoid of womanly tenderness. I had not imagined that I could sacrifice my finer feelings so entirely. A rat's panic is surprisingly like a man's, I discovered, and yet if it was necessary to lean over the opened lid of a glass tank and drop a wriggling, squealing, scratching and biting victim to certain death, I found that I could do it without blenching. I saw in James's expression what I had become. He would have said that he approved, that he had commanded me to keep the spiders alive, that it was the least I could do to atone. But his frown belied him. He never said so, but I think he...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?